This podcast is brought to you by our friends at Anchor by Spotify. And if you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. No specialty training or equipment needed. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast worldwide on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one place. And best of all, like I've been saying, Anchor is totally free. It's free. Download the Anchor app today or go to anchor.fm to get started and make your podcast dreams a reality. That's anchor.fm. What are you waiting for? Download the app.
Well, it's a big show.
Welcome to the Fade Route.
It's a big bad show tonight.
With DNZ.
Yeah, it's a big show.
Here are your hosts.
Crack it up. Tell them them lies.
DNZ. Welcome everybody to this week's episode of the Fade Route with DNZ. I am Z, and we got a great show for you. We're breaking down the MLB trade deadline, dissecting the Deshaun Watson drama, and Dan Butler's joining us to talk Yankee trades and a little bit of Giant football. But we begin on a somber note with the passing of broadcasting legend and icon Vin Scully. The renowned Dodger broadcaster died Tuesday at the age of 94. He died at his home in Hidden Hills, California. And what more can you say about Vin Scully other than he was the voice of a sport? He was the voice of a generation. He was the voice behind so many iconic moments, from the Bill Buckner play, Don Larsen's perfect game in the World Series, Kirk Gibson's home run. He was the broadcaster that every single broadcaster aspired to be. Born and raised in the Bronx, graduated from Fordham University, and then stepped into the Dodger broadcast booth not long after that. He was recruited out of college by Red Barber. So if you can get recruited by Red Barber, who is a legend in his own right, and then carry broadcasting for over 60 years, a lot of times doing it without a play-by-play, without a color man. Like, Vin Scully was the guy because he could so effortlessly weave a yarn while integrating it into the broadcast. It was as seamless as having a conversation with your friend while having a beer, you know, at a bar, just casually talking. That was Vin Scully's style, and he did it with humor, and he did it with class, and he brought baseball from where it was with the, you know, the Red Barbers and the Russ Hodgeses, very, very buttoned up. He brought it down a little bit to something a little bit more accessible for the casual fan, and he's often imitated, never duplicated, and broadcasting lost a great man. The Dodger organization, they lost a great man. Fordham University has lost a great man. The Bronx lost a great man. Vin Scully, rest in peace, sir. And here he is. I've known this guy since our days on Carousel Shoes flight crew through and through, the last QB in St. John's history. What's up, D? How's it going, man?
Yeah, I mean, you think about the old-timers and the things that guy got to see with his eyes live, right? I mean, the history that took place. And the best part about him was, you know, you listened to him calling the game, and it was like you were sitting next to a friend, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't just about what was going on in the field. It was about how beautiful the weather was. What are you doing this weekend? Talking about, you know, whatever food they might be eating. And it was just such a casual welcoming. It was like watching the game with your friend. And I think that was the best part of, you know, him as a broadcaster for the Dodgers and for baseball. I mean, huge chunk of baseball history. And that's what makes baseball such a great sport. There's just so much history behind it. And there's so many people involved that are special. And he was just a special guy and a special voice. I mean, I never got to meet him or talk to him, but I remember his voice was in a couple of baseball games, and it made that baseball video games. And it was so much fun to hear that voice, because as a person on the East Coast, you never really got to hear his voice unless the Yankees were playing the Dodgers, or unless, you know, there was some kind of special event going on. But he will truly be missed. And, you know, right up there with all the greats of, like, Harry Carey and, you know, our own Bob Shepard.
Absolutely. You know, Heaven has one hell of a broadcasting team. So, like, they, you know, if you really envision it, it's fantastic to think. And, you know, he spent his time in Brooklyn, and the first game he got to broadcast, Jackie Robinson was the cleanup hitter. And
nuts.
Yeah. And you fast forward to, you know, 2009, 2010, you know, you're broadcasting, you're throwing out names like Yasiel Puig, and you've got to announce Piazza and Karros, and, you know, legends, Fernando Valenzuela, you name it. Colfax, Drysdale. Vin Scully is the thread that ties them all together. He is the thread that is Dodgers history. And with Dodger history, because it is one of the storied franchises, you're entwining baseball history. You know, he's as much a historian as he was a broadcaster. And, yeah. You know, that's...
Baseball lost a legend, and then the NBA also lost a legend. We had the passing of Bill Russell, who died at the age of 88 on Monday. Probably the biggest winner in NBA in sports history, capturing 11 NBA titles. How do you remember Bill Russell?
Well, I mean, neither one of us saw him play. So when you're looking...
Well, not live.
We've seen video, but we didn't get a chance. You didn't get a chance to see his actual, like, impact.
We didn't live in the moment.
No, we did not live in the moment. But, I mean, his resume speaks for itself. You know, Hall of Famer, 11-time NBA champion, a 12-time All-Star, a 5-time MVP, an 11-time All-NBA player. Like I mentioned, he's on the NBA 75th anniversary team. You know, and that's not even taking into account his college years at the University of San Francisco. He was a player coach, and he was a champion as a player coach. But, you know, he did as much off the court as he did on the court. And, you know, he marched with Martin Luther King. He stood up for Muhammad Ali. He boycotted a game in Kentucky after his black teammates were refused service in a coffee shop. Like, he talked the talk, he walked the walk, and at the end of the day, he won. He was not just a winner on the court, he was a winner in life. And that's how I would like to, you know, that's how I want to remember the great Bill Russell. And the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2011, I mean, that's just a cherry on top. That's just the validation of it all. But he touched people's lives. What more can you say?
Just an incredible person, right? Yeah. Kind of like the Vin Scully thing. He's got to be on the... He's definitely on the Mount Rushmore of Boston sports. And he's probably on the Mount Rushmore for the NBA too, right?
Oh, totally.
The issues he had to deal with as a black man playing in Boston during that time, and still maintaining his production, and it's just so impressive. I mean, there'll be another Durant, there'll be another Kobe, there'll be another Jason Kidd. There's never going to be another Bill Russell.
No, there's never going to be another Bill Russell, and it falls in with guys like Will Chamberlain and Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, these men laid the groundwork. They paved the road for guys like Kevin Durant. They paved the road for Michael Jordan. They paved the road for Kobe Bryant. So without these men doing what they did, basketball would not be where it is today. You know,
11 titles. Yeah. 11.
The ultimate winner. Like, you really, I mean, you can't you cannot discount the level of victory. And yes, I understand, you know, Red Auerbach was cherry picking players and yada, you know, but
you still got to go out there and do it.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. Like, you got to play the games. Championships are not won on paper.
No. And he did it every day, in and out. And he was just the model player. I mean, just the model player, the model person, like you said. And it wasn't just on the court, it was off the court, too.
And he had the attitude, too. I remember I was watching a clip, and he was at an award ceremony. He said, "Find some kick your ass." Plain and simple, just matter of fact, like that. We kick your ass. And just like, okay. Like, you know, he not only talked the talk, he walked the walk, but he trash talked it too. So he, you know, he did not want for confidence. We'll put it that way. And Bill Russell is certainly an icon. He's absolutely on the Mount Rushmore of Boston sports. And he's got to be in consideration for the Mount Rushmore of NBA all time. I mean,
yeah.
Just
like I said, there's just never going to be another guy like that. Avoid messy accidents. Get better stopping power with your brake pads. Callahan brake pads. You never know when you'll be driving in the road and there will be a truck tire that you need to avoid and save your family. Callahan Auto. Really care about what's under your hood. But, you know, in other news, the MLB trade deadline has passed, with the Dodgers, Yankees, Padres, and Astros making the most eye-popping acquisitions. Who got better and who failed to make the most of the trade deadline, Z?
Well, let's start with who didn't make the most of it. I'm going to throw it out there for starters, because there are plenty of teams that didn't do. The Rockies didn't make a trade.
The Rockies. Chris Bryant back on the IL for the third time this year. Dude's got a bad back. Just shut him down. It's a wrap.
At this point, he's done. He's
just a wrap, man.
The Mets, number one. Like, they have, they definitely disappointed in terms of making a splash. Now, in terms of the rationale behind the move they made, it makes sense. They want to improve DH over Dom Smith and JD Davis. Done. Darren Ruff and Daniel Vogelbach are better than both of those guys. Check. They brought in Michael Givens. He's already started giving stuff back today. So Michael Givens, you know, not great. Not great at all. You know, their biggest acquisitions are going to be who comes off the IL. But if you look specifically at the Darren Ruff trade, the Mets got Darren Ruff, 36 years old, crushes left-handed pitching, for JD Davis and three prospects, including Thomas Zupacki, who I think was number 7 or 8 in terms of their top 10 prospects. If you told me that you were going to do Ruff for JD Davis straight up, okay. Like that makes a little bit of sense. They're the same player. JD Davis is just a little bit younger. But Darren Ruff, I believe it was an overpay by Billy Epler. It was a severe overpay. And, you know, they probably could – he got. Now, as far as who did well, I like what the Mariners are doing. They are going for it. You know, they brought in depth with Kirk Casale. They brought in Matthew Boyd. So if Matthew Boyd, you know, can be anything for them later in the year, like, that is a bonus. They went and got Luis Castillo. He got the big fish. They brought in, you know, Jake Lamb for a more depth. So you definitely are under the impression that the Mariners are making a move. You know, they're definitely going to try and secure one of those wild card spots, because I don't think they're going to be able to catch the Astros. I mean, the Astros shored up their team too. They flipped Jake Odorizzi for Will Smith. They brought in Christian Vasquez. You know, some decent moves. Trey Mancini is another one. It's a great move. Like, good bat will give a much needed injection of offense into that lineup. But we're kind of skirting around here, right? We're just dancing around the periphery of Juan Soto and Josh Hader to the Padres. This is AJ Preller pushing his chips in the middle of the table and then taking your chips and pushing them into the middle of the table for him as well. It's like, this is our year. We're going to do this. He's pulling a full Wes Snead. He's pulling a full fuck them picks. He's going for it right now. And you admire his balls. Like, I admire his balls. But eventually, this will all come due. He doesn't have to worry about that because he probably won't be here. So, like, for him to get Josh Bell, Josh Hader, and Juan Soto, you know, that's kudos to him because that's ballsy. And it's going to definitely pay off in the playoff time.
Well, I mean, yeah, the picks that he sent to the Nationals, the prospects, they're some really good players. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like just a bag of beans. Like, these guys are going to be professional baseball players. Like, it's not like, oh, maybe. No, they're going to be professional baseball players. Yeah, I mean, the Padres are going for it. I mean, Soto was great. Bell was good. But to me, Josh Hader is the best acquisition at the trade deadline, hands down. Because now you've got a guy who you can bring in to pitch to Freddie Freeman, to pitch to Mookie Betts, to pitch to Bellinger. Like, this is what you brought this guy here for. We have trouble closing out an inning, or we get into trouble late in the game, bring him in and shut people down. Because that's what this guy's done. That's what this guy does. And listen, Hader's not having the best year, but I'm sure in a new place, new surrounding, he's going to do well. The Cubs, to me, failed, man. They needed to deal Happ and Contreras. Contreras now is going to walk next year, at the end of this year, for nothing. For nothing. You get nothing back from him. And Happ's not going to be this good next year. He's never going to be this good again in his life. Like, this is your opportunity to get some stuff, and you didn't get anything. So you've just really locked down being bad for the next couple of years. The Mets didn't blow me away. I mean, I was just like, all right, did you really address the issues though? I don't really think they did. And did you guys give yourselves a chance to compete with the new Padres, to compete with the Dodgers, to compete with the Braves? I mean, these are the teams that you're ultimately gonna have to beat down the line, and I'm not sure they made the necessary moves to be better.
But I understand where Billy Epler's coming from, because you're acquiring, in air quotes, you activated Jacob DeGrom, you activated Trevor May, you're bringing guys back from the IL. McGill is going to be back for depth. You can use him out of the pen. Like, you have guys. Your best acquisitions and your cheapest acquisitions might be your own. So a full Met complement with these guys,
yeah,
might be able to compete. I
get what you're saying, but the problem I have is, I mean, I'm a pessimist. Like, I'm just being honest with you. This is the last year that the Mets are going to have Scherzer and DeGrom. Think about that. This is the last year that these two guys are going to be your 1-2 punch. So, really, you should be going all in with that in mind. And I don't think they are. I think they're thinking, oh yeah, we got this many years left on the Scherzer deal, and we got DeGrom for this. No, no, no. DeGrom heading for serious arm surgery next year. No
oh,
doubt
Jesus
in my mind.
Christ.
And Scherzer is getting older. Might have dead arm at the end of this year. Let's see what else I got. See, now I think, and Butler might disagree with me later on, I think the Yankees whiffed. I think they whiffed on Soto. 20 years ago, the Yankees would have went and got Soto. The Yankees would have 20 years ago, the Yankees would have been the Padres, getting Soto, getting a new first baseman, getting a middle reliever, getting a closer. To me, the Yankees are the team that should have got Hader. I know they went and got Scott E. Frost or whatever his name is from the Cubs. That's good. That's not Hader, right? I mean, they got a guy, but they're the Yankees bullpen is in such a mess right now. You don't. It's like roll the dice and who's coming in to close this game, close out this inning, shut play people down. You make that move for Hader, Hader's the guy. He can close. He can close out innings. He didn't do that. Soto should be a Yankee. He fits the Yankee profile. And he'd be the Yankee center fielder for the next 10 years. But no, they didn't go get him because they don't want to give up their Volpes, their Dominguezes, and all those guys that they think is going to come up and be the future. I mean, it's fine. Well, that's the way you want to go. If you want to go into the postseason batting LeMahieu, Judge, Stanton, and Rizzo, you want to go into the postseason like that, go for it. But they did make good. They did go get, Harrison Bader. They got the guy from the Bader from the Cardinals. I do like that move. He's a good center fielder, and he's a good defensive guy. He's a local kid, too. So those guys always shine. But then what is Aaron Hicks supposed to do? What are you paying Aaron Hicks for? Is he going to go DH? So it's whatever. But everyone seems impressed with what the Yankees did. I mean, but I'm not impressed. I think, and like Trevino, what's Trevino going to do? He's having a terrible year. A terrible year. You're going to bring him to the Bronx to pitch? Who's he pitching to? What spot is he coming up in? Do you know? Because I sure as hell don't know.
Well, I think that he's going to be 7th, 8th, somewhere in there. He's not going to be...
Good Lord.
Yeah, he's not going to be a higher... He's going to be a moderate leverage. He's not going to be your closer like he was...
So he's pitching to Vlad G. He's pitching to those boys up in Toronto in a big spot.
Well, I mean, he's as good of a choice as any because look at Chapman. Chapman has not been there this year. He's not been where he needed to be at all. Clay Holmes, he's starting to come down to earth. They miss Michael King. The Yankees miss Michael King something awful. Yep. And Chad Green, too. The problem is that Chad Green's not going to be around for a long time because of Tommy John. Now, you're going to maybe Zach Britton gets back by September. We'll see. But Wandy Peralta, you're looking at a lot of guys in that pen. Albert Abreu. If I see Albert Abreu one more time, I swear to you.
I like Nestor Cortez. Some people say he's fluky. I actually just think he's having a really good year. I think he's good. I think he's going to be good. But look at your boy Cole giving up six runs in the first inning today, giving up bombs to Seattle.
Yeah, well, you know, this is exactly – he gave one up to Kelnick. That's all you need to know. Jared Kelnick gave 126.
All I'm trying to say is, like, you got Kirchin and all these people worshiping all the moves the Yankees made. And I get it. They filled the spots they need to fill. 100% agree. But you can't look at what they did and look at what everybody else did and say, yeah, they're in a good spot.
I would give the Yankees a solid B for what they were able to do. The guys they brought in. Solid B.
I disagree. I would give them an A for what they did because they filled the spots they need to fill. But compared to the teams that they need to beat, they didn't do that well. Like, the Dodgers are going to scrape them if they play them in the World Series. The Padres, with that lineup, assuming Tatis Jr. comes back and can play, crush that bullpen. Will fucking destroy the Yankee bullpen. And I'm giving them a pass saying they get to the World Series. How about what the Astros did when getting Trey Mancini? And then they go and get they pull the Billy Bean and say, hey, I don't want Christian Vasquez to play against me tonight. Send him over.
Right. So, I mean, that's the thing, though. Like, I like what the Yankees have done. I'm not totally in love with it. The same way I'm not totally in love with what the Padres did. I think that, I mean, I understand you're going all in. I love the ballsiness. I absolutely love the ballsiness, but I just don't think I still don't think they're good enough, believe it or not.
I can agree with you on that because they're going to have to beat the Dodgers, and I don't know if they can.
And the Dodgers tripped up too because their biggest acquisition was Joey fucking Gallo.
I don't know what that's about. Obviously, somebody's Taylor's getting a hand job under the table on that one. I don't know what that's about.
Oh my god!
I don't know who's taking that trash.
Friedman did Cashman a favor on that one, but like that one scratch a head scratcher. No, Syndergaard to the Phillies was a head scratcher.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
I mean, it's not like Noah Syndergaard is gonna, you know, do well.
I like the Braves. I like what the Braves did. They locked up their third baseman for the future.
How about Eric Hosmer almost wrecking the entire Juan Soto trade?
That's fantastic. I'm not going there. I'm not fucking playing there.
I'm not playing there. You send me the Boston Red Sox. Send me the Red Sox.
I'm not playing there. I can see how he's pissed off, right? I can see how he's pissed off. But the Braves went and got a closer because Jensen's probably is not coming back, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I like what the Braves did. You know, we got to just beat them. We just got to win. We got to stay within our division. And you look across we look up in the standing, you see the Mets are like, oh no, they didn't do enough.
And what about the Twins? Let's touch on the Twins for a second here. They brought in the closer Lopez from the Orioles. They brought in Tyler Mahle. They brought in Michael Fulmer. Like the Twins, we had little to no hopes. And I'm putting that lightly. You know, I'm definitely downplaying that, soft pedaling it a little bit. But the Minnesota Twins, they're making a go of this. And they're definitely, I think they made themselves a lot better. The Guardians didn't do anything. The White Sox didn't do anything of note. I mean, the Royals are in, second to last place anyway. And they traded Whit Merrifield to the Blue Jays. The problem is that Whit Merrifield can't play in Toronto because he's unvaccinated. Whoops! How about that one? So, plus they got Sandy Leone for depth for catcher. The Twins, with these moves, I think they're running away with that division now.
Yeah, we'll see how the next couple of weeks play out, but I think everybody's jumping on the Yankees too much.
We love youth sports. Not only do they get the kids out and active, but they promote teamwork, sportsmanship, friendship, and fair play. One of the Fade Route's favorite youth sport partners is Ossining AYSO Soccer. Their mission is to develop and deliver quality, player-centered youth soccer programs that promote a fun, fair, family environment where everyone is welcome and everyone plays. If you have a child between ages 4 and 18, registration for fall 2022, spring 2023 season is open. To sign up or to volunteer as a coach or referee, go to ayso201.org today. The more volunteers, the more children can enjoy the AYSO soccer experience. Go to ayso201.org today for more information or to sign up. ayso201.org. More soccer for more kids.
But we move on to football. Retired federal judge Sue Robinson made her ruling yesterday in the Deshaun Watson case. To the surprise of most, Watson was only suspended for 6 games. The news was met with jubilation at Browns training camp and silent head shaking in almost every other arena. Arbitrators are supposed to rule based on the evidence provided. How did you feel about the ruling and what happens now?
Not nearly strong enough. I'm on record. He should have been fined last year's salary. He should have been suspended for this year without pay and should have gone from there. That's putting it light. All you're doing is reinforcing the problem that the NFL has with female fans, how it treats women. And you are saying that because it is quote unquote non-violent, that somehow it's, not as, it doesn't meet the standard of some of the other previous suspensions and precedents. Tell that to the massage therapists who were forced upon that it was non-violent. Having somebody's penis rubbed on them or being solicited for a happy ending or being solicited for some of the other acts that Mr. Watson was asking for and then in some instances demanding, that is vile. It is absolutely vile. And it's seeing the reaction of the fans too, It was disgusting to me to see that, yeah, Deshaun, now we're going to get him. We're going to the Super Bowl. I'm like, dude, no, that's disgusting. That is absolutely, I was ashamed to be a human being at that point. I was ashamed to be a football fan. And, you know, the NFL has a major problem with women and they need to fix it because, you know, at the end of the day, it's about inclusion. It is all about inclusion. And you taking this, you know, you taking this stance as the arbiter, it's just not right. And I'm glad Roger Goodell is appealing. The NFL is appealing. And hopefully they get closer to they're going to get closer to an actual resolution to this. But at first blush, like, complete limp-wristed and horrible job on her part.
Yeah, so I got two different takes on this. I mean, initially I was like, kind of like what you said. I was kind of, you know, couldn't believe it. I thought it was too light. And, you know, then there's a part of me that's like, gotta trust the process, right? I mean, this is a retired judge. I mean, she's looking at all, she's a woman too. She's taking into account all the information. And this is what she's come up with. It's like, if we're not going to respect the process, then what's the point of the process? And granted, I think he should be suspended longer too, and for more games. I mean, they're pretty much equating his predatory behavior with deflating a football. I mean, that's a little ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, I gotta respect this judge. I gotta respect this ruling. Now the NFL's already come out and said they're appealing for more games. And that's fine. They should. To me, it's like you got to make sure people understand that this was wrong. But then again, it's not like she came out and said four or three or none. I mean, this is after her reviewing all the testimony, seeing both sides of the coin. She's seeing this man leveraged his position as a NFL player onto women. And, you know, she felt six games suffice. And the other thing I think about is this man also didn't play all of last year, right? It's not like he played last year. I'm not sticking up for the guy. I'm just trying to say I respect the judge's ruling. And I'm respecting the process because now the NFL is appealing it. And if he gets more games added on, I'd be happier.
I just find that it was an incomplete picture being painted by the NFL in its prosecution, right? If we're going to treat this as like a plaintiff versus defendant type thing, you know, they presented their case to the arbiter. And frankly, it was an incomplete case. Only four of the women's testimony was allowed, as opposed to the 24 allegations that were made. So you're already seeing an incomplete picture. And yeah, in the court of public opinion, and Watson is absolutely guilty of this. Now, based on multiple articles, multiple pieces of evidence, some anecdotal, some concrete, it's unseemly. And it all needs to be on the table. It can't be cherry-picked in order to determine, you know, what is suitable, what is not. That's her job. That is Judge Robinson's job, is to go through everything with a fine-tooth comb and determine what is germane, what is not, what is damning evidence, what is not, and then go appropriately. I mean, she concluded, right? She found that he committed these acts that were against the personal conduct policy. Her quote was, Watson had a sexual purpose, not just a therapeutic purpose, in making these arrangements with these particular therapists. And based on her interpretation, she has determined that there was culpability. So, you know, there is something there, but it's not enough. Now, I understand where the NFL also isn't too keen on, you know, lambasting the judge or trying to overturn this because it's her first ruling. And otherwise, you know, the NFL in the past is the judge and jury. So, you know, if they are to act, this renders her participation in all of this, Judge Robinson's participation in all this, if the NFL ends up acting, it's rendered a sham. You know, if Roger Goodell is just going to give Watson the sentence, the suspension that he wanted, it renders all of this pointless. It renders all of this useless. It becomes a banana republic and a sham court. But I agree with you. Like, you are very much equating Tom Brady's deflation of game balls, right, with 24 allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault. That just doesn't compute. Now, maybe this shines a light on the fact that the NFL needs to codify, like, and actually give, you know, a concrete number of games for concrete actions. Like, if you go into a court, if you commit first degree murder, you're going to get this amount of years. If you commit petty theft, you're going to get this amount of years. If you have, you know, if you get caught jumping a turnstile, you only pay a fine. You need some kind of concrete codification. And I think that's where guys in the past are starting to, you know, come up in arms. Like Calvin Ridley, this came down, and how many people rushed to Calvin Ridley's defense? Calvin Ridley got a year for gambling because he was, you know, dealing with the integrity of the league. This doesn't deal with the integrity of the league, if not more so.
Is your hair thinning or is your hairline receding? Scalp micropigmentation will fill in the areas where your hair is missing by creating a short buzz cut look. Micropigmentation is a non-invasive procedure that will create the illusion of hair follicles for 7 to 10 years. For people with alopecia, this could be a permanent fix. For people with scars on their scalp, this is a great way to camouflage a scar. Don't lose confidence or feel like you need to wear a hat wherever you go. Marquez Studio is located in the Bronx and is open for all your scalp micropigmentation needs. Consultations are free and appointments can be made any day of the week. Get your hairline back with scalp micropigmentation. The techs at Marquez Studio have over 30 years of hair cutting experience and can assist you with all of your questions. Call to schedule a consultation today, 646-221-8728. You can also visit them on Instagram at Bronx Marquez to see their gallery and view all their satisfied customers. Again, that is Marquez Studio, located in the Bronx, New York, 646-221-8728. Flawed system. Sticking with scandal in the NFL, the league punished the Miami Dolphins on Tuesday for tampering with Tom Brady and Sean Payton from 2019 to 2022. Owner Stephen Ross was fined $1.5 million and suspended until October, and the team was docked a first-round pick in 2023. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Big deal in that it validates what Coach Brian Flores was saying. He didn't, while it's still unclear as to whether or not the $100,000 bribes, the $100,000 kickbacks for losing were legitimate or not, the arbitration indicated that they thought that Stephen Ross was kidding when he said that. So I don't know how you can, you know, it's not on tape. I don't know how you can determine whether or not he was joking based on that. You're going to, you know, take his word for it, but... You know, Flores mentioned they wanted Brady. They wanted Peyton. There was a boat meeting, and ultimately it didn't happen. So this vindicates Flores to a degree, and I'm glad that he is on Mike Tomlin's coaching staff and he has a chance to, you know, continue his livelihood. You as we know, you and I thought he was going to be blackballed, at least for a little while. It's good that Brian Flores can hold his head high and know, you know, he is being vindicated more and more. But what I find interesting is Sarah Spain brought out this little tidbit of information. Tom Brady is linked to all three forfeitures of first round picks. So each time an NFL franchise has had to forfeit a first round pick, Tom Brady was somehow involved. That is very interesting. What I find most interesting is that, you know, Stephen Ross is $1.5 million fine. He got stripped of his committee duties. Like, they came down harder on the team than they did on the owner. So, you know, $1.5 million is chump change for a billionaire. So I'm sure he's upset more about the fact that he's paying the $1.5 million and he didn't get Brady and Peyton. But imagine if he was successful. If he had Brady and Peyton and only had to lose $1.5 million, he'd be like, shit, I'll do it again.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think this was a big deal. Interesting to see that the Dolphins were trying to get those two together. I mean, we speculated it. We had speculations on this show about a year ago saying that this was in the works. I think Peyton and Brady meeting up in Miami is still possible. I think it's still a possibility, right? NFL rarely gets these fines and dock trades correctly, but I think they got it right here after a 6-month investigation. I wonder how many things the NFL doesn't catch, right?
Willful ignorance? I'm kind of thinking it's going to be willful ignorance. Depends on who it is, right? Like, you know, the McNairs, they're probably under a larger microscope now than they were in the past. Jimmy Haslam is probably under a greater microscope than he was in the past. Dan Snyder, he definitely is. We know that. He's in international waters, and he's not coming back. You know, he's extradited himself to his boat. But, you know, it's very interesting to see who the NFL will move on and who they will not move on. But we're going to see where this goes. And, yeah, I think that ultimately the Dolphins are going to walk away from this. Like, they're going to get their $1.5 million slap on their wrist. Ross is going to keep doing his thing. And they're going to keep trying to get the quarterback, because I don't necessarily think that Tua Tagovailoa is it. And I don't think they're convinced either. And that's part of the reason why Brian Flores is no longer the coach. For all the grill masters, green thumbers, home repair heroes, and DIY aficionados in the Richmond, Virginia area, if you're looking for a personal service quality products and a convenient shopping experience, look no further than Thacker Ace Hardware in Colonial Heights, Virginia. Owner Don Rackley and his team of local experts have everything you need to tackle all of your home projects. I'm talking paints by Benjamin Moore and Clark in Kensington, power tools by Craftsman and Milwaukee, electrical, plumbing, hardware, and let's not miss the grills. Weber, Big Green Egg, Traeger, Blackstone, top shelf amazing. And for all you green thumbers, their nursery department is fantastic. Give them a call today, 804-766-4223, or stop by 27 Dunlop Village in Colonial Heights. That's 804-766-4223, or swing by 27 Dunlop Village in Colonial Heights. Thacker Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks. But, yep. You know, the Dolphins didn't get Brady, but they should have their quarterback of the future, or so they think. The Denver Broncos are trying to figure that out, too. Russell Wilson is 33. He has 1 year remaining on his deal. You gave up the farm, right? You gave up a good haul of players and picks to get him. There's no guaranteed money. So should the Broncos extend Wilson or see how it plays out?
I mean, Russell's been trending downward the last year, so I don't think they should extend him. long term. I saw their wide receiver Patrick just went down with an ACL tear. That's like they've lost three wide receivers the last 3 years. The ACL tears. Cam Hamler, I think, was last year.
Mm-hmm.
They gotta do something about the field. I don't know, but I'd say let Russ play out the season and see where you are in January. He's probably the worst or the third best quarterback in that division, so you should be looking towards the future. He's not Peyton Manning, he's not Tom Brady, he's not Drew Brees, so I mean, I don't think an extension is that necessary right now.
I mean, he's fine right now. Like, Russell Wilson is a fine quarterback. He's fine. He's good. You know, he's 104, 53, and 1 for his career. 65% completion for his career. 87 picks to 292 touchdowns. Pretty good. The problem is when they have this let Russ cook shit. Like, Russell Wilson is great until they start letting him cook. Like, that's when he starts making mistakes. But in the past, he's had guys to kind of cover up for that. And he had a killer run game in Marshawn Lynch. This year, you're going to have Javonte Williams, Melvin Gordon. You're going to have a run game. He's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be bereft. Like, Seattle, like, just lost Chris Carson. He retired. So, like, that's who Russell Wilson has been, like, relying on to get major rushing yards. And if you're looking at, you know, you have a top three of Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, and KJ Hamler. Like, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good trio out there. And the line's not terrible. Like, could it be better? Yes, it could be better. But, I mean, he's got a good left tackle in Garrett Bowles. They'll be able to, you know, protect his blind side. I think Russell Wilson is on a prove-it kind of deal at this point, and I think that that's fair because Russell Wilson needs to prove that he is who we think he is. And there's that inevitable decline during the year, and he's got to prove that he can get over that hump because, I mean, last year, 6-8, but 12-4, 11-5, 10-6, 9-7, 10-5, 10-6, 12-4, 13-3, 11-5. Handily over 500 for his career. But each year, handily over 500. And he's been given more weapons. Prove it. Put up or shut up. And then we'll pay you.
Are you in need of air care maintenance or service? I have the company for you. Air Care Technicians. They service the Westchester and Northern Bronx area and can help you with all your heating and cooling maintenance and service needs. Just give them a call at 914-315-1547. Again, that's 914-315-1547. Or shoot them an email at aircaretechnicians@gmail.com. These guys are the real deal as they are veteran-owned, licensed, and insured. Make sure to tell them that D&Z sent you. And last week, we discussed the lack of wide receiver talent on the Chiefs. Another team inept at wide receiver this season will be the Green Bay Packers. Lazard, Watkins, Watson, and Cobb are not Crosby, Adams, Driver, and Jennings. Who is in a worse situation, the Packers or the Chiefs?
Well, let's see. You're looking at, for the Chiefs, like we went over it already, like Juju, Hardman, Valdez, Scantling, Josh Gordon is your number four, Corey Coleman is on this team, and a bunch of other guys.
Shit's weak.
Yeah, that doesn't, I mean, luckily they have Travis Kelsey. Luckily the Chiefs have Travis Kelsey. You know, Alan Lazard is not Jordy Nelson. You know, Christian Watson, Sammy Watkins, Randall Cobb. Like, that's bad. Like, both the Packers are in trouble, especially if Robert Tonyan is not going to be the safety net. Mercedes Lewis is there, but he can't do at his age what Robert Tonyan can do. So I think that between those two teams, the Packers are in a lot of trouble. But I will see those two teams, and I will raise you. The Dallas Cowboys. CeeDee Lamb. Michael Gallup is hurt. James Washington is hurt. Jalen Tolbert is your number three. And then who do you have? Dennis Houston, Noah Brown, Kevontae Turpin. Who? Who are these people? And then thankfully they have Dalton Schultz as a tight end. But that's it. Of these three, I would say that, you know, the Cowboys are the worst. The Packers are second worst. And the Chiefs, they're not bad by comparison.
Yeah, but I think CeeDee Lamb's a big time player. I think he can carry it. He reminds me a little bit of when the Steelers moved on from Mike Wallace, mm-hmm. and they had Antonio Brown come their number one, and everybody's like, "Oh, he can't handle it. He's not ready. He's not." And then he became one of the best receivers in the league, and he led my fantasy team to a championship that year.
Nice.
I'm going with the Packers. I can't see LaFleur developing a scheme without the best wide receiver in the game, and we saw how well the Packers did without Rodgers last year. I think Andy Reid has the ability to design an offense that balances the run and the pass game well. He knows how to coach with what he has. So I'm going to say that the Packers are in a worse position than both of those teams. I like Dallas's situation better than the Chiefs, but I think the Chiefs will be able to figure it out.
Now, our Figure It Out segment of the week brought to you by Figure It Out by Coach Mike Westhoff. We're still working on it, Coach. It's a great read. But there is a specter, in my opinion, hanging over all three of these teams, and one that we got before Mike Tannenbaum got the other day on First Take. I said about 3 weeks ago that the Dallas Cowboys should sign Odell Beckham Jr. Odell Beckham Jr. is still out there, and he would make any one of these teams better. So who do you think? Let's do good, better, best. Who's the best fit for Odell Beckham Jr. of these three teams?
Of those three teams, I'm going to say the Chiefs is probably the best, right? And then the better one I would go with the Packers. And last, I would go with Dallas. I just don't think Dallas needs it because Dallas has the run game. I know Zeke is on the decline, but Tony Pollard can run too. They have Schultz. They've got a true number one guy. Like, I really think Dallas is going to be okay. The Chiefs, I think, could really use him. I mean, I think he would fit in really well with what they do there. And, of course, Aaron Rodgers could benefit from him. Like, you know, to me, Dallas is more of a balanced team. You know, where I look at the Packers, and I think they're always trying to gun it. Even though, you know, Jones does very good on the ground, he gets hurt.
And he's turnover prone. Like, he's put them on the ground. And we've seen it in big-time moments. So, in terms of good, better, best, I think a good fit would be the Chiefs. I think they have four or five guys, so they can theoretically spread it around, and they want to spread it around more. But Odell Beckham Jr. would definitely make that team better. A better fit would be the Packers, just from the simple fact that he immediately becomes a number one. Right, and then those other guys become better because he's drawing the number one target. Now, does that necessarily does Odell Beckham necessarily want that? Because that means less for him. So his numbers suffer, but Alan Lazard's numbers are going to be fantastic. And for me, in my opinion, the best fit, Lamb and Beckham, bookending that offense. It opens things up because now
you and Mike T, huh? What did he invite you to play golf recently or something?
I had it first. I had it first, Mr. T. I am going to reiterate that I had it first, and well, thank you for listening to the show. Much appreciated, Mr. T. But, I mean, I feel like with the injuries they've had, if James Washington was there, if Gallup was there, this wouldn't be a question. But because we don't know and we don't know what they're going to be, Gallup's coming back from a knee. Like, knees on a wide out, that might be all she wrote. They traded Amari Cooper and they kept Michael Gallup, and then he immediately had this problem. So we'll see. But I think that that kind of opens up the floodgates a little bit, because you'll have Beckham on one side, Lamb on the other side, and you'll have Schultz to go over the middle. So Beckham doesn't need to worry about going over the middle, which has kind of been the injury issue. And then, you know, because you're now balanced even more, that opens up for Zeke, that opens up for Tony Pollard. And I think that will benefit Dak Prescott a little bit more in the long term. But, I mean, he's playing it close to the vest. I really don't know where Odell Beckham's going to go. And I don't think anybody does. And that's kind of, that's going to be an intriguing storyline that kind of hangs over training camp. And we're going to see how long it lasts. Do you love brownies? Of course you love brownies. But you know what's better than a brownie? A delicious, handcrafted, gourmet brownie delivered right to your doorstep. That's what our guys at Sweet Life Brownie Co. offer. Chef Tommy D and the crew offer a dozen delicious delights that you will crave, from the classic OB to Dutch apple to campfire s'mores and many more. Check out their website, sweetlifebrownieco.com, for their Friday brownie drops. At noon, their site goes live and you see what they're making. Since you're there, become a site member and earn points. You earn 50 points just by signing up. Make sure you follow on Instagram and Facebook too, at sweetlifebrownie_co, for the latest updates and their latest releases and creations. That's sweetlifebrownieco.com. Give them a call, 845-641-3043, and tell them D&Z sent you. That's sweetlifebrownieco.com, 845-641-3043. Sweet Life Brownie Co., because there's always room for a brownie. It's the In Route, where friends of the show get a special segment with us. Want to be part of the action? Want to be the newest member of the In Crowd? You know what to do. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or slide in those DMs on Fade Route Podcast on IG, or hit that Twitter, FaderouteDNZ.
Joining us on the In Route today, we have New York Giants insider and resident Yankee fan, Danny Butler. Danny, thanks for coming on again.
Thanks so much for having me again, boys. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you again.
DB.
All right, we'll start you off with this. The trade deadline is come and gone. The Yankees were very busy adding Frankie Montas, Andrew Benintendi, Lou Trevino, Scott Efros. We got Harrison Bader, while subtracting Joey Gallo and Jordan Montgomery. What is your letter grade for the Yankees' deadline moves?
I think you have to give him an A. Cashman did a good job. He addressed pretty much every need they had without giving up the real big prospects. You know, the Dominguezes, the Volpes, the Peraltas, you know, the Pereiras. They did a good job with that. They could have got – they didn't really go after Soto, but I thought that was kind of a pipe dream anyway, because – They love Volpe. Volpe is going to be their starting shortstop maybe next year. But I think Cassie did a great job. You got to give him an A.
But would you agree that 20 years ago, they would have went and got Soto?
Yeah, no, absolutely. 20 years ago, yeah. George would have gave up Soto and they would have signed him, and they would have re-signed Judge. And if that would have been their plan, I would have been all for it. But to me, if they were going to trade for Soto, extend him, give him his almost $500 million, what he wants – that probably means Judge is out the door next. So I'm looking at it 3 years from now. Would you rather have Soto? Would you rather have Judge, Dominguez, and Volpe? So I think they made the right choice.
The way the deal was constructed, like, they would have been more in the Soto and Corbin camp, more so than the Soto, Bell, and Voit camp, right? You know, like that kind of deal. Like, you figure, because Rizzo didn't want to include Corbin to get a max on his Soto's value, but like the Yankees would have blown through that, since they were looking at Corbin, right?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, Cashman got killed for not going spending money after Corbin. He's been a disaster since. That's a move that that's a George Steinbrenner move where, okay, we'll take your guy that's making way too much money because we don't care. These are not the George Yankees anymore. These are the Hal Yankees.
Right. Right. I mean, Brian, like you said, Brian Cashman addressed depth in the outfield, starting rotation, and the bullpen to keep the Yankees on their 119-win pace. But which of the additions will be most valuable in your opinion?
I think the obvious one is Benintendi. I think he really fits this team. We're still a little too much home run reliant. Not as much as we've been in the past. We're not totally all or nothing, but we're still too much. I think he's a guy, he gets on base, he hits all fields. His power's really never developed, but in Yankee Stadium, you know, he could still hit one out. I think I would like to see him batting second, maybe LeMahieu one, Benintendi two, to have Judge even more of RBI opportunities, but they love Judge in the two-hole. Montas was a big pickup. He's a legit number two because you don't know what Seve's going to be with after the injury. He's not going to be back until mid-September. Cortez is very good, but, you know, you don't know. He kind of does what Smoke and Mirror sometimes, so that worries you. Taillon got off to a great start, but he's been really struggling of late. But Montas is a legit number two. I really love Trevino in that deal, too. He hasn't had a great year this year numbers-wise, but if you delve deeper into the numbers, it looked like the analytics show he's run into a lot of bad luck. And he's also has good numbers career against the Astros. He's faced them a lot being in the AL West. And against Bregman in particular, he's got good numbers. So I really like that. The other guy, the bullpen is a worry now because Chapman's so consistent. Holmes has not been good since they moved him to the closer. Getting those last three outs is a big difference. So to get more bullpen depth, I really think helps them a lot.
So you think Trevino eventually becomes the closer? Is he a setup guy? What do you think is going to happen there?
I think it's going to turn into more of a situational thing than anything because I don't think they really – I mean, unless Chapman really just gets hot in one of those tears where he's dominant again and throwing 102 and not thinking, maybe Boone goes back to trust him. But I think it's just going to be kind of by committee, which I don't like. But let's face it, we don't have the lockdown guy right now.
I mean, are you going to throw your eggs into the Zach Britton basket? I mean, I know he's on a rehab and he's probably coming back soon.
Yeah, that's why people keep on forgetting about Britton. I mean, he's done it in the past. So if he shows that he's healthy and pitching well, that's definitely a guy that you can trust in that spot. So I think that they have a lot of options anyway, and with the moves at the deadline is even more so, which is a good thing.
So to you, the outfield will now be Bader, Benintendi, and Judge. Would Hicks DH'ing or Stanton DH'ing, is that what you think it's going to look like?
Yeah, I was a little – the Montgomery for Bader move I wasn't crazy about. It leads me to believe that Stanton's injury, it's either a little more than they thought or when he comes back, they don't want him playing the field. So, and if that's the case, you need – after get rid of Gallo, you do need another outfielder. And Bader's an excellent fielder. Not much of a hitter, but he's an excellent fielder. You know Hicks is going to probably be hurt at some point, too. Because he always is. And Bader's a local kid. Yeah. Bader, you know, went, he grew up Horace Mantle. There's a local flair there. So hopefully, you know, he can get it back home.
He's definitely got to be feeling good about this. But now turning to the rest of the league's moves, the Padres, Phillies, Braves, Astros, Mariners, Twins, and Blue Jays were all particularly active. What got your attention? And did anyone do enough to challenge the Yankees come playoff time?
Well, I think the worst trade by far was Brittany Griner for the Russian arms dealer. But no, I'm just kidding.
Has that gone through yet? Has that gone through yet?
I don't know. I think they're waiting on physicals and the paperwork to get there. No, I'm just kidding on that. But, I mean, the Padres obviously made a huge splash. They're a good young team, and they've kind of – they were always – like, the last couple of years, they've been the media darlings, but they really haven't taken that next step. I mean, it's a great move for them. Because with Soto, if Boris is going to want every last dime representing Soto – if they could be in the same spot 2 years from now and say, hey, we're going to trade him for a boatload of prospects, we'll replenish the farm system, and maybe we win in the next 2 years. And then, or maybe Soto falls in love with San Diego because it's a beautiful city, and hey, I want to stay here. I also think getting Hader was used for them, and Brandon Drury, too. They made a lot of moves.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
all this for the second wild card spot.
Well, that's what it is now. So many teams make the playoffs that it's different than like, oh, well, we don't have to win our division. Let's just go in with a better team in the playoffs.
All this to beat the Braves or the Phillies in the first round.
Probably. Yes, from Mets fans' point of view, yes, that's what you want.
Beat him up. I don't care. Yep.
Also, I like what the Jays. I like Whit Merrifield. I always thought he was a very good player, and he kind of gives them a little element maybe they haven't had. They're kind of a lot of power hitters. He's a guy that gets on base, can run a little bit. The Astros made some, I think, very smart under the radar moves, especially because you know it's people always say it's going to be us, the Yankees, and the Astros, and I think the Astros think that too. He's a good player. He has success against the Yankees. Christian Vasquez is a good player. He always kills the Yankees. So they're eyeing October matchup with that. I think those were some good under the radar moves for them.
Definitely. And you know, going past the trade deadline, going past October, we're going on to contracts now. As we know, Aaron Judge bet on himself, and he's having a monster MVP season in his walk year. The Yankees are hesitant to give Judge the length of the contract he wants. D's on record that the Yankees should just let Judge walk, but I think you can't let a homegrown superstar walk so easily. After this season, is this a backup the truck situation, in your opinion, or should the Yankees just let him go, let Judge walk?
In my opinion, it's a backup the truck because this guy, like you said, he's a homegrown superstar, one of the best players in baseball, having one of the best years, you know, we've ever seen, you know, especially in the last 20, 30 years. But this isn't George's Yankees anymore, you know. So, and even with George loved other teams' players, his own players. He didn't like to spend the money. But I was a little surprised at the beginning of the year, not that Judge turned the contract down, but that the Yankees offered 7 years. I thought it'd be more like a 5-6 year thing and throw more money at him per year. But they went 7 years, and like you said, Judge bet on himself, and it's going to come through. If I'm the Yankees, I know he's 30, but you got to look 8 years, probably over $40 million a year. You're talking like. You know, you're talking eight for like 42, 43 a year. I think you have to do it. If he's upset over the way things happened in the offseason and he wants just crazy, crazy money, yeah, maybe you have to let him go. But I can't imagine the media and the fans and that outrage if that happens.
I mean, if we're going to look at this and like do a comparison, right? You have Derek Jeter, whom they let test the free agent market, and they really right. wasn't that much coming back. And then you look at Robinson Cano, who just went for the payday, and I think we all can agree that that was a bad move on Robinson Cano's part because, you know, he got paid, but I wouldn't say that his run in Seattle was particularly successful. I wouldn't say his run with the Mets was any more successful. He had more PED suspensions than, you know, 20, 30 homer seasons. Like, it's, you know, where does this fall?
If you also go like Jeter, you said Jeter and Cashman, they still don't like each other over that those negotiations. And you go back even further to Bernie Williams in going into the offseason in 2000, he was like an hour away from signing with the Red Sox. He actually called George himself and said, "I want to be a Yankee," and they worked it out. So like it has happened before. So it's not totally out of the realm, but I just can't see it right now.
So 8 years you think is possible, but definitely not 10.
Yeah, 10's too much. Now you're talking until he's 40. But 8, even 8's kind of pushing it. But with the year he has all the leverage. Also, you got to think, in a couple of years, Stanton will be off the books. Gerrit Cole will, you know, towards the end of that contract, he'll be off the books. And with our farm system, they don't have to start paying these guys for another 4 or 5 years if these guys do all come up and become legit stars. So, I mean, the Yankees really, I know it's not their way anymore, but they really need to bite the bullet, just give Judge what he wants.
Yeah, but with it, I mean, he is 30, like you said, he does want like a 9-year contract. Now, do you think that adding in a couple of opt-outs or adding in those, you know, a couple of options or something, you think that would be something that would be like a deal breaker on his part, or do you think it would be something that, you know, like if he looks at it as an opportunity, like, hell, I can even make more money?
Yeah, like if you want to give him, you know, you sign to an 8-year deal, and let's say after year four he has an opt-out, because if he's still putting up these kind of numbers and said, hell, I could get another 6-year contract now for even more money. Maybe you do that. Maybe that's something that would entice him. Also, I think, and sometimes when guys come up in New York, they get spoiled by the media attention and, you know, all the, not only accolades, but the endorsements that come with it. When you go somewhere else, it's not always like that. I mean, Judge is going to be a star wherever he is, but when you're in New York, you really have that advantage. Sometimes the guys that come up through that don't appreciate that till it's gone, like a guy like Cano.
Definitely.
And you would assume the captaincy will come with this next contract, right?
I think it would have to. I mean, if you're going to give this guy eight, 9 years for $300-350 million, it makes all the sense in the world to name him the next captain. I mean, he fits all the criteria.
Absolutely. He's definitely the straw that's stirring the drink right now. But, you know, we've been talking baseball the whole time. But, you know, football season is drawing close. We have about 35 days till the season officially kicks off. And the Giants have addressed their offensive line issues in the draft and free agency. And they added a few depth pieces like Matt Breida. You know, they definitely made some improvements. We'll be ordering up the NFC East in the coming weeks. But since we have you, you know, where do you have the Giants finishing this season?
I mean, I don't think you can get your expectations too high just based off of last year's debacle and pretty much the last 5 or 6 years of debacles. But I really do like the moves they made. Like you talk about, you know, getting Thibodeau Neal in the draft. I mean, there was time before the combine, you're going to go 1-2. If you would have told me, you know, back then that the Giants were going to get them at 5-7, I would have told you to take a walk that you're nuts. But
yeah. No, I didn't think Neal would fall. Yeah. Thibodeau either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a kid like Wandale Robinson, who was people kind of scratched their head saying, oh, maybe that's a reach. But the guy, you know, Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, they know what they like. And he's a guy that fits that system. I would say I think this team definitely has a possibility to win 7 or 8 games, maybe 9, a winning record if everything falls into place. You never know with the NFC East.
Is Kadarius Toney the X factor this year?
He could be. He's so freaking talented that it's just if he wants to play or not.
They got to get him the ball.
They got to get him the ball in space. Hopefully he's working on his route running ability. I know under Daboll's system there's a little bit more of freestyle involved, which will definitely help Toney. And hopefully if these guys practice every day and don't get hurt, that you know Daniel Jones can work, get a chemistry with these guys so they know what they're thinking. So when guys break off a route, Jones knows what to look for. So, you know.
But Galladay's also got to have a better year. I mean, you can't get much worse than the last 2 years, right?
No, he was pretty bad. But I go back to the chemistry issue. Galladay's a guy, he doesn't have blazing speed, but he's tall. And his job is to get the 50-50 balls. He was the best in the league at that for a couple of years with the Lions. Where throw it up, he's going to come down with it. And I think because he was hurt in training camp, he didn't get a lot of work with Jones. And I just don't think he trusted him enough for those 50-50 balls. The way, like, back in the day, Eli would trust Plaxico. When Eli was a young quarterback, saying, throw it up to Plax, he's going to catch it. And that really helped Eli's career and get him confidence. Jones didn't have that with Galladay. Hopefully with a year under their belt and more practice, they do get that comfortability.
Eli definitely did not have a problem just throwing it up. That's
no,
for sure.
No, he didn't. He did not. Well, one gunslinger to another. You should appreciate that.
That's right. That's right. Just throw it up. Somebody's out there. Somebody will get it. Plax is out there somewhere.
Yep.
Well, I mean, we'll get you out here on this one since we're
Greg
talking
Doyle's
about
Greg Doyle's out there somewhere.
Greg Doyle, yeah. Mike McGee was open, I think.
Mike McGee's out there somewhere.
Oh, my God. Yeah. These are the deep cuts, ladies and gentlemen. These are Spellman Falcon football, certain circa 2001. My goodness.
Greg Doyle, but number 87, I believe, right?
Yeah.
There we go. My sick memory is still working.
Our 20 year is coming up, gentlemen. I'm just reminding you now.
Yeah, thanks. So, thanks for reminding me. Appreciate it. Jesus.
So we ran a Twitter poll, and this got your goat a little bit, DB. We ran this Twitter poll last week about Jimmy G's best landing spot, and the results were overwhelming. 50% of the people that voted said the Giants. So should the Giants pursue Jimmy G, or do you prefer to ride with Danny Dimes for one more year?
Yeah, like I said, that I really don't understand the whole Jimmy G to the Giants thing. I mean, I guess people just think it's a landing spot because Jones is an unproven quarterback. But if the Giants were a very good team with a quarterback that's holding a back, that's making too many mistakes, okay, fine. Yeah, Jimmy G's kind of a game manager. You put him in for a year or two, and you hope he can get you over the hump. The Giants aren't that team. Jimmy G he might make them a game or two better, but that's not what you want. Listen, Daniel Jones might go out there, and even with a new system, a good offensive line, more weapons, he might go and still show his inconsistencies and that he's not ready. And then, I think you have to chance it this year. And if he doesn't get over the hump, well, then that's it. You worry about that next year. But Jimmy G to the Giants this year, I don't think it makes them better.
Who's the class of the division this year? Is it the Cowboys, the Eagles? What do you see?
I mean, the Cowboys are the most talented team, but they've been the most talented team for 20 years, and it doesn't really help them.
The injuries to the wideouts.
Well, they seem to be really, you know, ESPN and the other networks seem to be really hyping the Eagles.
I just don't. I mean, the Eagles, they have weapons now. That'll help Hurts. I don't trust Jalen Hurts in a big spot. He's a good quarterback. I don't think he's going to be a winning quarterback that's going to take anywhere. I know Carson Wentz isn't anything great, but I think he improves the Redskins a little bit. But I think it's going to be a typical NFC East where it's going to be four average to below average teams knocking the hell out of each other. And, you know, I think nine wins the division.
Wow.
No, that's fair. That's fair. This has been the NFC East for a little bit now. So we'll definitely see where it goes. Brother DB, thank you for coming on. And what's upcoming at the Tubby Hood? What's coming up?
Things are going good at Tubby. We got trivia every Tuesday night. That's always a fun time. Karaoke's every Thursday. That's a great time.
Nice.
Brunch Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, it's a good spot. Come in. Well, you know, hopefully Mets and Yankees are playing deep into October. So we'll have all of October covered for your baseball needs. You know, come on in. And if you mention the Fade Out podcast, I'll actually be nice to you instead of being miserable like I usually am.
That is a sweetener, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Make sure you go to Tubby Hook, drop our name, and you may get a smile from DB himself. Dan Butler, thank you for coming on, brother. And if you want to be the next member of the InRoute, hit us up at FadeRouteMail@gmail.com. Slide in those DMs at FadeRoute Podcast on IG, or drop us a line on Twitter at FadeRouteDNZ. Dan Butler, thank you, brother, and we will have you on again soon.
Thank you so much, guys. I'm looking forward to it. All the best.
Can't help but smile when you see a balloon. The simplest occasion is a party. Westchester Pop Stars, located in New Rochelle, New York, offers balloon styling and decor for all life's events. Birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, showers, school and corporate events, store openings, or just because. Westchester Pop Stars takes balloons and shapes them into works of art, creating decorative installations for your special occasions. No event is too big or too small, and their custom personalization service is top notch. Westchester Pop Stars is a private studio, quickly expanding. In-person consultation is by appointment only. Send an email to westchesterpopstars@gmail.com for more information or to schedule an appointment. No need to hire an event stylist. All you need is balloons. Currently servicing Westchester, Putnam, New York City, and Connecticut. To find Westchester Pop Stars, search for them on Instagram, Facebook, or Google.
The Fade Store presents the Alleged Superstar of the Week Award. All right, boys and girls, you know what time it is. It is time for the Alleged Superstar of the Week. We put up a poll on our Twitter page at FadeRouteDNZ, and you vote, and you vote, and you vote, and you vote. The winner gets the coveted ass trophy and gets his or her name dropped on this very podcast. And do you know who took home the ass last week, D?
I don't.
Matt Rhule.
Yeah.
All right. Good job, coach. You won something. But that was last week. This is this week. Who are your nominees for Alleged Superstar of the Week, D?
All right. First up, I got Hollywood Brown, arrested in Arizona and charged with criminal speeding. Come on, man. This is dangerous. Do we not see what can happen if you speed excessively in the highway? People could die. Hollywood Brown, you are my Alleged Superstar of the Week. Next up, I got the Cubs front office. You failed to move the best players on your team, so you will be just this bad for the next several years. Contreras will walk in free agency for nothing, and Hap will likely not be this good next season. Cubs front office, you are my Alleged Superstars of the Week. And last, and certainly least, Carson Wentz, throwing three picks today during training camp with fans in the stands. It's a bad luck, bro.
My man.
Remember, you play the Eagles twice this year. You're in their division. Don't screw it up. Carson Wentz, you are my Alleged Superstar of the Week. Z, what do you got?
Carson Wentz isn't making those games. Taylor Heinicke is going to play both of those games. Bullshit or no shit? Right now, Taylor Heinicke is playing both of those games. I'm
bullshit.
Going.
Oh, bullshit. Wentz will play.
I'm going no shit on that. But we'll see what happens there. But for me, Jerry Jones. For somehow reinvigorating your rivalry with Jimmy Johnson and getting petty over the Ring of Honor. When is Jimmy Johnson going to go into the Ring of Honor? I get to make that decision. It isn't, at the end of the day, all tailored around whether Jimmy is sniveling or not. Well, that's nice. Petty. Petty, petty, petty. You know I love me some petty. But Jerry Jones, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Toronto Blue Jays, for trading for a player in Whit Merrifield who cannot play for your team right now because he's unvaccinated. He cannot play the home games. How's that going to work out for you? I guess he's going to have to get vaccinated now, isn't he? And Whit Merrifield, you're on this list too because you famously said, why am I going to get vaccinated? My team stinks, and it's not like I'm going to go play for Toronto anytime soon. Whoops. So Whit and the Blue Jays, you are my alleged superstar of the week, and I got a bonus one. Gerrit Cole. 6-run, 3-homer first inning against the Mariners this afternoon. Gerrit Cole, you are my alleged superstar of the week. We have many. They are varied. Go to our Twitter poll and vote and vote and vote. And for our nominees this week. Just do better, boys. Just do better. Your favorite podcast has its own merch line now. Go to the Fade store with DNZ.com today for all your Fade Route merch needs. I'm talking tank tops, t-shirts, sweatshirts, like yoga pants? We got those too. Like some cool accessories? We got those too. And we're not done yet. We have so much more planned for you, but check out what we have today at the Fade store with DNZ.com. That's the Fade store with DNZ.com. Order up! We continue on our division preview for the NFL season by ordering up.
Order up, order up.
The AFC South this week. From 4-1. Who you got, D?
Alright, I mean, I was tempted to go a little wild, you know, and have the Texans be the number one team, but I just can't. I'm just going to go start off with the Texans at number 4.
Come on, man.
Davis Mills is their quarterback. Brandon Cooks is their wide receiver. Enough said. I do hear good things about Damian Pierce in training camp. He's a strong guy. He's turning heads. Tough guy. But they're heading in the right direction. It's just going to take some time to turn it around. Number 3, Jacksonville. I was tempted to score them higher, too. I actually think the Jags will finish close to 500. Peterson's the right person for the job, and I think their defense is going to hurt them. But I think offensively, they're going to make really good strides this year, especially NTN's back, so they should do well. Number 2, I have the Titans. This grade is assuming King Henry's healthy, too. They drafted a wide receiver with asthma, and they traded away the best wide receiver they had. So this is what happens. You fall to number 2. Number 1 to me is the Colts. I really am a big fan of Matt Ryan joining this team. I said this once they made the trade. I truly believe this team is a quarterback away. I think their defense is ready. I love their defensive backs. They have probably the best running back right now. Their defense is solid. I think they take the division. What do you got, C?
Well, I mean, we agree on the Texans, but there's a little more hope there than we think. You're looking at Brandon Cooks as your number 1. Chris Conley is there. Chris Conley is a solid if unspectacular player. Philip Dorsett is there. Solid but unspectacular.
That's what they said about you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, like, it's on my business card. Like, I handed that. It says underneath my name, solid but unspectacular. But you're looking at, you know, their running back room isn't bad. Marlon Mack, if he can ever stay healthy, and that's why he's not in Indianapolis right now. Rex Burkhead and Royce Freeman. Like, that's not bad. Yeah, that's not bad. So if they can get a wideout, at least a wideout, to kind of bolster this room, and if they can get a tight end, like, they can steal some wins. But right now, I don't like it. They're not there yet. Number three, and this might shock you, I'm taking the Titans. I think it's going to be enough of a drop-off because of the losses in the wide receiver room. Like, your number one is Robert Woods, but Robert Woods is also coming back from injury. Shocker, Robert Woods is injured. But, you know, can Derrick Henry truly carry this offense? We've seen him do it for years now. But, you know, how many times is he going to be asked to do it before it stops working? You know, you can only truck so many guys. Eventually, they figure out how to tackle you. And, you know, Ryan Tannehill is Ryan Tannehill. Like, he's just good enough to get you beat. Like, he is, well, that's every quarterback in this division. Just good enough to get you beat. Except for Davis Mills. He's just not great. So, Titans are number three. Number two, Jacksonville Jaguars. They made a lot of headway in the offseason. And we'll see. Shad Khan spent the money, right? He brought in Christian.
Sounds like the tiger from the Jungle Book.
I was thinking the villain from Mortal Kombat, but we'll go with that. But, you know, like, Christian Kirk, Marvin Jones, Zay Jones, Chenault, Laquan Treadwell is there. Like, good for Laquan Treadwell. He's still getting
Zay
jobs.
Zay Jones has a chance.
Like, that's a pretty good. I mean, that's a top three. Why, as a top three unit, that's a pretty good unit. I mean, Dan Arnold is there. Our boy, Cardinal Spellman's own, Chris Manhertz, still there. And, you know, they brought in Evan Ingram. So, you know, you're going to see Jacksonville. You guys are going to see how bad Evan Ingram is. Sorry about that. You're going to get a better year from Trevor
Lawrence. They're taking a flyer on him. They're taking a chance.
Bad. I mean, they paid. They paid for him. And frankly, you know, I think it's a waste of money. But, you know, what can I say? Like, as a jilted Giants fan, like, it was a waste of money. I expect a good year from Trevor Lawrence, and Travis Etienne and James Robinson need to come together. They need to come together in order to make sure that it's not all on the kid. And I think they'll do a good job because James Robinson is a good running back. He's a very good running back. So we'll see what's going to happen there. But by default, our number one is the Indianapolis Colts, right? Pittman, Paris Campbell, Mo Alie Cox is still there. Jonathan Taylor, Nyheim Hines. They brought in Philip Lindsay as their third string. And now you have Matt Ryan and Nick Foles. All right? Frank Reich, he knows what he's doing. Even if Matt Ryan isn't great or gets sidelined, you have one-trick Nick. He'll be able to hold the reins for a while. And frankly, the division competition is not as stiff as we thought it would be.
This has been the Fade Route with D&Z. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Catch our podcast Wednesday nights on Anchor, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Until next time, stay faded, everyone.
Time for us to run the go route, but we'll talk to you next week. Want to get in on the action? We want to hear from you. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com. Slide in our DMs on IG @faderoutepodcast. Drop us a DM on Twitter @faderoutednz. Comment on our YouTube channel, The Fade Route with DNZ. Questions, comments, picks, segment suggestions, you name it, we want to hear from you. Get at us, in crowd.